Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Real Gamer News, IRGN Podcast. I'm here tonight with a special guest, Barry Collins, behind the new title Ashencraft, which is being released up for Kickstarter probably by the time you guys see this podcast or tomorrow if you're seeing it live. How's it going, Barry?
Pretty good. Actually, it's Ashen Rift, but good enough.
Oh, Ashen Rift, that's what I said, right?
I said craft, but it's all good.
It's not Crash Bandicoot.
That's just
yet.
That Boston accent. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
So, do you want to tell us like the vision of your game? I got to see some alpha gameplay footage. I don't know how dated that is exactly, but it looked pretty good. So, what can you tell us about the game?
So, Ashen Rift is the first-person shooter. It's a survival horror kind of game. To my mind, it's really inspired of games like Quake 1 and what's the other games? Shadow of the Colossus and Journey and things like that, which are a little slower paced and a little more scenic. And the whole idea behind the game is you play as this dude who is trying to shut down a rift that has previously pretty much wiped out all life on Earth and mutated anybody near it. So he's on his way there to try and shut it down, and he also happens to have a dog, so the game's really centered around sort of the relationship between you and the dog. And that's kind of, hopefully it adds like a new little dynamic to the game. It's not quite like Elizabeth, like in BioShock or anything, where it's, she's a counterpart and stuff, but this guy, he's gonna add a little bit more of a natural element to the game instead of some of the more over-the-top elements that they get into with BioShock.
Wow, that's cool. I'm excited to hear that you're inspired by Quake as well.
Yeah, it's my favorite game. It's like the number one inspiration for the game, really.
That's awesome.
That's just really cool to me. So what types of stuff do you plan on bringing in for gameplay mechanics? Like, I really liked the intro that you had, the audio intro on your site, where it kind of the narrated and presented to you the world that, like you said, that's had all life like strangled out of it by this force, this mysterious force. And what kind of gameplay aspects do you kind of want to how to deliver that you're ready to talk about?
Well, the game's going to kind of rely mostly on pretty straightforward like first-person shooter mechanics. Again, really inspired by Quake, so really just get the first-person shooter thing down solid. And then beyond that, there's going to be interaction between you and the dog. So there'll be a circle menu that you can use to select commands for Bounder, and he'll respond. And then there'll be the enemies. So basically, the way I sum up the game is that there's four major elements. I had to go through this like 1,000 times for the Kickstarter video. But there's the world. So interacting with the world will be things like blowing up a pillar of rock and have it fracture and collapse down on perhaps a pathway where there's an enemy coming towards you, or perhaps right down onto an enemy. I also have like a fully destructible terrain system, so you'll be able to, say, set up a propane tank, blast it, and then it'll leave a huge dent in the ground. So potentially set up a couple explosives, blow up the ground, have a big crater there, and then the feeders will walk into it and get tripped up for a bit or whatever, right?
That sounds cool.
Yeah, a little bit of like an ambushy or like just setting traps, that kind of thing. So there's the world, that kind of aspect, and then there's the dog, and like I said, interacting with him in a circle menu, telling him to shut up or telling him to go over there or whatever, those sorts of things. Say there's an enemy nearby and you need him to stay quiet and stay close. You want to hide in a bush, so you tell him to stay close and to sit, so he just stays still and doesn't go chasing after the enemy. Because he's going to add that kind of a random element. Maybe he'll start barking at the wrong time if you're not working with him very carefully. And then who knows, he'll get swarmed by a bunch of the feeders, right? So yeah, the world, the dog... Yeah, the world, the dog, and then the objects within the world, like I said, propane tanks or planks of wood or whatever, so you can set up traps, and that plays off of interacting with the world. Clicking switches, that kind of thing, the usual stuff at that point. And then, What's the fourth one? There's the objects, the world, the dog, and the non-player characters, so the enemies. And they're just super reactive to everything. They'll be reactive to sound. So, like I said, if Bounder starts barking, that could be big trouble for you. If you set off an explosion, that could also attract them. If you were stuck behind one and he was in your way and he didn't notice you, pick up a rock, toss it, he'll hear the sound of it, go after it, and then you and your dog can go by.
I was just going to ask if you could use the sound to trick them. That's cool.
Exactly. Go ahead.
Just a quick question. Where does it take place? Is it in a major city, or like?
That's actually a good question. In my head, I'm not gonna say, but in my head, I know exactly where it is. From a storytelling perspective, I don't think I want everyone to know. But I say on the website, on the Kickstarter page, and stuff, central United States of America, or what used to be that. And it's kind of near the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And at this point, as regards the story, that's about as much information as needs to happen, because Earth and state lines and borders and countries have been gone for the past 10 years, right? So,
I mean, that's a pretty good setting to use the Rockies.
Yeah, it's cool, because what I like is it gives you nice, like, rural, like, farmlandy areas. Lots
and
of
a creepy local feeling, too.
Yeah, and then it also gives you, because they're heading up into the mountain range a little bit, so that gives, like, a really nice variety and an easy introduction for me as effectively a solo developer. It's not more than I can bite off, not more than I can chew, right? So, yeah.
As a single developer like me, the small things are the biggest. You know, there's always going to count. They're always going to count. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so, yeah, I'm pretty excited by the fact that you said, first and foremost, you want to get the shooter basic mechanics down really good, and that you're inspired by Quake. So now I'm thinking, like, you're going to you already have designed this damage system that you talked about with items and stuff, and you're going to be inspired by Quake and stuff. So does that mean, like, you got some pretty good hit detection right now in your testing?
Yeah, everything's going pretty good with that. I've got a shotgun, a double-barreled shotgun, obviously, and what other weapon do I have in there? Oh, and an axe, because of Quake. It's actually a bloody hatchet, just like in Quake.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's kind of in similar fashion to Quake 1. I've been actually avoiding doing any... I think I'll end up with it in there, but I've been avoiding things like headshots and all that, because that was never really a big deal in Quake 1, and that kind of... As soon as you do add in headshots, it really does change the dynamic of the game. I think that was kind of like a dividing point almost for shooters in like the late 90s, right? It was all of a sudden they started doing headshots, and that totally changed everybody's play style. Not that I have a problem with headshots, but I'm at least going to run with no headshots for a while, and then I'll add it in and see if that really alters the dynamic and kind of spreads it away from being the Quake 1 feel that I'm after.
So you're going for like a more retro style, basically?
Yeah, in a sense, like kind of just staying with the basics, and then it kind of lets you focus on the dog and lets you focus on the story and the setting and enjoying the views around you and stuff, because Ashen Rift's not going to be... it's not going to be a super action-oriented game, although, like I said, it's based on like the feel and vibes you get from Quake 1 for running and gunning, so like good, solid mechanics. But at the same rate, I don't want that to be the whole game. It's got to be, I'm kind of referring to it as like moments, so it'll be a whole lot of like walking through a massive formerly farmland, right? And it takes you quite a while to get through there, and maybe you catch a glimpse of a bird overhead, and that's kind of out of the blue and kind of catches you by surprise, and it's kind of beautiful to watch, and you're there and you're in it, and maybe you're saying things to the dog or he's running off and digging a hole or whatever, right? So keeping the gameplay quite slow-paced almost, and then and then really like amping it up with the interactions of like, oh my god, there's a feeder and I've got three bullets. What do I do? Do I throw a rock at its head and then run away, or and then start throwing more rocks at it down the hill, or do I use my one bullet to blow up a propane tank I placed carefully by a rock, because at least the explosion plus falling debris, that's a guaranteed kill, or do you distract them and go the other way, right? So it's kind of a neat little player choice thing thrown in there at the same time.
All right, wow. That's cool. I like
is
that.
Is it level-based or quest-based? Oh, God, I'm sorry. Is it level-based or quest-based? You know, like Fallout, you would just have this one single huge piece of map and you would just travel? Or is it like level-based?
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of do it like so it is a very linear story that I'm trying to tell. There is definitely a point A and a point B. It's not gonna be like Grand Theft Auto where you have a giant open world and you can go do this mission, that mission, that mission, or whatever. But there's at least going to be a lot of options to kind of tell the story the way you wanted it to be told as you go through the story that I'm presenting to the player, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Perfect.
That's cool. So, and you're also like focusing, like you said, you're focusing on like certain gameplay moments where stuff's going to happen in the story, I'm assuming, and
that's oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like objects in front of you. I had one more question though, if you didn't mind. Is there anything further you could reveal at this time about maybe like ways you could survive in this throughout the story, or or you not like if you have anything further to reveal? And then we could talk about the Kickstarter that's happening tomorrow.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, the Kickstarter tomorrow, that's a big deal. So different ways to survive. I can't really think of anything groundbreaking that's at least in the picture right now, other than that I'm just gonna sort of play it a little more logically with things like falling damage. Say if you fell 10 feet or more, that kind of thing, you might have a temporary limp forced upon you. And the details of like, do your health points regenerate like in Halo, or over like say 5 minutes out of combat and your health is back to normal, or do I stick with like a Quake 1 to 100 kind of thing, or will you naturally heal slowly, or will you bleed out? Like those really nitty gritty details, I don't know yet. They haven't really, the game's still so early on that I haven't really had a chance to start diving into that aspect of it. So I do though intend to have like limping, like I said, from falling damage. So that kind of thing can play into a bit of the survival aspect. And the storyline itself is literally going to take place over basically almost real time for him. So I want to do like in the first episode, the first release, I'd like it to be like 3 to 4 hours. So you don't have a whole lot of like, oh, I gotta eat every like 10 seconds and like fall out. Oh, there's some bacon, I'll eat that. Oh, there's this, I'll eat that. It's not like that. He might grab, you know, some canned cream or some canned beans or something like that along the way, but it's not gonna be like, oh, must eat, must green up, you know? So.
More focus on the action and the story.
A story, big time, for sure.
All right, well, that sounds awesome. Thank you for kind of previewing that with us right now. I appreciate that. So, speaking of the Kickstarter launching tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's supposed to, I'm hoping that, apparently there's like a delay or something with Kickstarter themselves, so when I click submit, I think they do like over 24 hours to maybe 48 hours, I think their website said, for them to review it, to make sure it's good to go. So I think on my website I said launching anywhere from the 28th to the 2nd, because I don't know exactly when it's going to go live.
Oh, okay, all right. So yeah. What can people expect for like backer support? You guys come up with anything?
Yeah, so I'm asking for $45,000, because that gives me a little bit of a budget to cover things like the Unity license, because that's the engine I'm using is Unity. And some art outsourcing, so a couple extra assets, paying like the voice actor, which would be really nice. He's been doing all that for free. Same with the guy who's been recording it all. He's been doing all that for free. Sound effects.
Very good voice acting, by the way, I thought.
Yeah, awesome. I'll let Nick know about that. It's funny, the voice acting gets mixed reactions. Some people are like, oh, the game looks great, but you got to change the voice. And then a lot of other people are like, voice acting is really good. So we'll
wow,
see.
That's strange. I thought it was good.
Perfect, yeah.
He sounded very professional when he spoke.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
too. Fit the character, the look.
Yeah, he's good.
That really kind of like gave the game its identity, and I liked it. So I don't know, that's
perfect.
Interesting. But for me, yeah, I really, that like helped kind of me establish what the game is, you know?
Awesome, I'm glad to hear.
Definitely don't change it.
Okay, good to know, perfect. So backer rewards and stuff, aren't we talking about like game pricing later on too? So I guess this kind of ties in.
Yeah, this is probably a really hard thing for you guys to like decide, and the industry, you know, has certain ways that it seems to be going, but then is that really the way it should go? And yeah, we kind of have a lot to talk about tonight with that stuff.
Perfect. But, I guess as regards my thoughts on it, to like kind of, that we'll get more into it later, but like I said, I'm looking at like 3 to maybe 5 hours of gameplay, and I kind of just compared that to like a $60 game and how many hours you get out of that, and I just figured somewhere around $15 seemed fair for an indie title with this kind of a polish and hopefully this kind of appeal and all that, right? So I kept it pretty minimal, but at the same, I guess it's a little high for indie games, maybe. I'm not too sure. And then, so that's sort of the
sort of like diminishes the horror aspect to it as well.
Exactly. I completely agree with that. That's been one of the big focuses for me is because in my first playthrough, even if you guys watched the playthrough, the 10-minute one, that was when I realized that shooting things is not the most entertaining thing, and making a bunch of monsters that soak up your bullets isn't really all that entertaining. It was like the moments when I literally knew I only had like 3 bullets left and a rocket that I could pick up and throw at them. That was when the game really started to happen for me. So I was like, that's it. I've got to make, like, ammo has got to be super rare, and it's got to be all about, like, literally, I want you to be able to pick up the sand on the ground and throw it at its face, and have the thing maybe stumble and cough for a second and then come back after you. Like, you're scrambling, you're desperate, and it's going to get you if you're not careful.
All right.
I think we took over your show for you for a minute, and I think you're muted right now.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we had a little technical difficulties there. Thank you guys for proceeding without me. I'm not sure what happened there, but we're going to look into that. So, did we cover your backer stuff a little bit there?
Yeah, a little bit. There's going to be some pretty cheap prices. There's going to be like some early bird where you can get the game for $10, save some money, and then there's going to be things like jacket patches. If I don't know if any of you guys are into like motorcycles or anything, and you can slap a jacket patch on for Ash and Rift or whatever, right?
Nice.
What else? T-shirts.
Sweet.
Actual game in DVD case kind of thing. A 3D printout of like Bounder and his master encountering a feeder, like a diorama of that.
That's so cool from a 3D printer.
Yeah, but it's going to be a little bit expensive, just mostly because they're actually really expensive to produce.
That's a pretty collectible thing, though, too.
Yeah, I'm going to have it be one of 100, and then, yeah, that's pretty cool. One of the more expensive pledge packages is to actually have your face made into, like, one of the actual characters that you run into in the game.
Wow, that's so cool.
That's pretty cool.
Well, I always make that a digital reward.
Yeah, one of the other rewards is to design your own Easter egg. So there's going to be one of 25 that you can design. So if you buy the pledge package, you can be like, here's my grandfather's antique watch. Here's a couple pictures of it. Make that an Easter egg in the game, and I'll make the art for it, throw it in the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So that's a little preview, I guess, for some of the different pledge package options.
All right. Well, thanks for that.
Yeah, no worries.
So, all right, we're going to have a link to some assets, possibly whatever Barry has for us to link. Is that alpha gameplay the latest?
That's actually the earliest stuff. That was like okay. The first thing I did. So that's about 3 months old at this point, I think.
Okay.
So the Kickstarter video is going to have a whole lot of new stuff in it.
All right, awesome. We'll make sure that there's a link to that once it's live. And, of course, we'll do a news about that as well. So check out for that. And Action Rift, you can Google it. Thank you for talking about us about that. And
my pleasure. Thanks for having me on to talk about it.
I'm glad you're staying around also, because some of these topics that we have tonight are pretty interesting, I think. I want to start off with the first topic. Should indie devs avoid doing their own PR? And that was kind of a question that was posed, I think, initially by the situations that was happening recently with Total Biscuit and the Fun Creators Company, which I don't really know why that's happening or what's all behind it. And I think nobody really knows right now. It just kind of seems like a crazy amount of public back and forth. And there's always like three sides to the story behind the scenes whenever that's going on, right? So, I just wanted to know, like, before we get into the whole thing, I noticed Aubrey, who's the head of marketing at Deep Silver now, she kind of came out and was the first one that, like, vocally said, like, as for very popular people on Twitter and stuff, of the industry, she kind of said, like, don't do your own PR if you're indie. And then a lot of people kind of came back to that, like, oh, we can do our own PR and if you're good at it and, like, stuff like that. And then she kind of was, like, providing a lot of places where you could, like, do your own PR but at least do it better or something like that. And then just, I don't think she meant any harm to anybody. And I've had good experiences with indie people doing their own PR and kind of, like, weird experiences. I wouldn't say bad experience, but nonetheless, you know, this whole situation with Total Biscuit and a few different developers that's happened to him a few times now where they try to get his videos taken off YouTube basically is what happens because he gave a negative critique of their game and then they kind of, in this case, they kind of like made a whole soap opera drama out of it that is just really weird to watch, and I don't know, what do you think about this? This probably isn't that big of a topic as it seems to me, but it just seems like something to think about as far as, like do you think PR companies should, indie companies should work with PR companies, or do you think that sometimes it's not worth it, or what's your experience or thoughts on this, Barry, as a developer?
I guess I keep my head down and I just work most of the time, so this is actually the first time I've even heard of this. But I find that it's okay to do your own PR if you're actually willing and dedicated to do things that seem spammy, that seem dirty almost. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I've followed people in hopes that they'll follow me back because I know I'm doing a big news post that day or something, right? Like, you've got to do what you got to do to spread the word. The way I look at social media is that it's all about ego. Everybody's got their ego. Is that my system feeding back. I can put headphones on. Maybe. Anyway, I can. So I see social media as ego stroking. It's all about everybody wants to feel good. So when you, if you stroke someone's ego, if you like their post on Instagram or whatever, or on Twitter, they'll be like, oh, sweet, somebody liked my post, who's this? And then they'll look at it, and they'll be, oh, he's cool, I'll follow him. So I'll use the tactics, and I think every single indie dev should do this. If they should go and look for anybody who is a gamer or anything like that on Tumblr, Instagram, whatever, and they should just like it. Whether or not they like the photo or not, or the post or not, they should like it, because it's like handing out a business card. Every single like you do, they all of a sudden somebody new knows about you. And in the end, honestly, I've found so many amazing people to follow back and interact with that way. It seems cheesy, but that's how I think social media works as regards trying to do self-promotion. And then obviously doing good posts and being informative and useful and having good product and that sort of thing. But I can't see a need for, unless you're going to hire somebody to sit there full-time and do exactly that for you, I don't really see the need to have anybody else do it for you, unless I'm totally missing another aspect of social media or public relations.
I would say there's other aspects to PR, but perhaps a lot of it is leaning towards relying on the social stuff now, which is why some PR companies may take advantage and not do as much. I've noticed that happening. No companies in particular that are like big that everybody knows. Those are pretty good ones usually. But they work with like magazines and stuff like this, and like,
oh, yeah. See, that's
random TV shows. Yeah, try to get you like crazy ads on like Super Bowl or something. You'll probably need a PR company for that. But I have one other question for you. Do you like try to email websites? Because I've been curious about this. Some indie developers tell me that they have bad luck with some sites trying to get the articles on there, and some indie developers tell me that they have a great time. So I'm curious if you're going to be approaching it like that, or if you don't want to say, that's fine.
Oh, that's fine. I think I sent out an email yesterday that went to maybe 10 different places, including like Kotaku and like Rock Paper Shotgun. And is that going to do anything in the end? I don't know. Spam out 1,000 emails with the same message, and even if only 1% of them actually responds and does anything, that's a pretty big win. You've got to work super hard to be seen in this AAA video game world. You've got to literally jump up and down. Like, I'm going to the Game Developers Conference in like a week or so, or 2 weeks in March. And yeah. I'm getting a jacket patch made by a screen printing friend of mine, and it's going to say on the back, it's going to be like, are you Game Press? Talk to me about my game, Ashen Rift. Like, I'm as bold as can be, it's going to be on my back everywhere I go. Like,
wow.
And I'm bringing all my jacket patches, I'm going to hand them out, and I'm going to give out every business card I have, and I'm going to talk to everybody in game media that's there. Who knows, I might literally just stand out in the middle of the expo floor and be like, I'm making an indie game, come talk to me. Like, that's effectively what you have to do, as far as I can see, if you're doing this kind of like self-done guerrilla marketing all by yourself, right?
Maybe dress up like your main character.
He's pretty much based on me, so...
I know, I was going to say, you got to have me there.
Yeah.
Persona.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
Walk around with a shotgun and a pit bull.
Well, I'm glad to hear, though, that you're at least, like, attempting to email, mass email tons of sites. I would. I mean, just from the outside looking in, you know, but...
Yeah, there's no harm in doing it, absolutely none. Right. And I'm going to assume that the failure rate of, response rate is going to be way, way down, or, well, high failure, very few responses, but it's going to be worth it for the two or three that do respond, right?
Right. If you get, with those big sites, too, it seems like if you crack one of them, they're all going to do a post about it.
Exactly.
So, like, if you got Eurogamer to say one thing, then everybody, like, there you go, this crazy guy was at GDC, and check out his game.
Exactly.
Then everybody will write a post about that.
Yeah.
There'll be like 50 to 100 sites that day will write a post about it.
Yeah. So, I'll make the news easy for them. It'll be really easy.
Yeah. That's cool. All right. So, I wanted to talk about another thing here. Irrational Games and Santa Monica Studios. They recently had a whole bunch of layoffs, unfortunately. Irrational Games kind of like folded into itself, but I don't think it did as a company. I think it just, like, it's the same effect, the amount of layoffs, basically. They laid off everybody except 15 people, they said.
Oh, really? That's crazy.
Yeah, and they're right here in Boston, where I live, so that's a whole bunch of game developers that have nowhere to go, and Microsoft is trying to hire these other people who got laid off from the God of War team at Santa Monica Studios from Sony, which that game always does pretty good. Ascension wasn't as much as loved as the other ones, but I would hope that they at least made profit, because there's a pretty sizable chunk of sales.
Yeah.
But that kind of leads into what I wanted to ask you guys and talk about this, because there's really nothing we can say about the layoffs, except that obviously we hope that they arrive at another game company and keep making games, because we love games. But other than that, do you guys feel like the industry's AAA budget business, like the business model of like making games for millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, manpower, and then trying to market it for millions and millions, do you think that whole like business model is like collapsing? Because like Capcom was having troubles not that long ago, and I thought they were going to rebound.
They are having troubles.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, I thought they're going to rebound, but it looks like they're kind of staying in a weird zone right now. And then Square Enix, they want to put a brave face, but not that long ago we were hearing horror stories about them. And then, but they could rebound easily. It seems almost like they're gambling with way too much money on every project. And then when they put out the projects, they don't have the innovation in each project that you would expect from all that money and time, because they're like maybe scared to take a risk, like the classic meme of the AAA. But is it really that bad? I mean, maybe I'm asking redundant questions, but and then the fact is, are some of these like Irrational Games, they kind of basically just went indie, like in a weird way. Like they just cut off all their workers except for a select few, and now they said they're gonna do like a concentrated project, and the BioShock games are gonna be 2K games is gonna hire somebody to develop those now, or develop it themselves. So, and that's not easy either. Like, it'll be easier for them because they have the cushion of Take-Two Interactive to fund everything. But, like, going the indie route in general, like how you're doing a solo project indie, like, any type of indie is not necessarily going to be easier. And if anything, it might be harder because you have to do more work yourself, right?
Yeah. I think they're going to be, if that's what they're doing, if they cut all of their staff so they could go down to a super tiny team, I think that's super smart, because as far as I could imagine, I would assume that they're rolling in it from the success of BioShock.
Yeah, Infinite was huge.
So I assume they'll have a couple years operational cost minimum to just float their 15 guys, right? I've seen a lot of guys do this, like Lee Perry at Epic. Most people probably don't know who I'm talking about, but like Lee Perry. Everyone knows Clippy, right? But not Lee.
From Epic Games.
Yeah. Lee ended up, he was like lead gameplay designer on Gears 1, 2, and 3.
Wow.
So pretty much responsible for how awesome that game is. And he left Epic not that long ago to do indie games, and him and his like crew of like 7 guys or whatever it was, I think. They all split off, and they had enough money because they were very successful at Epic to float by for like a year or so, and then they made that iPhone game, Lily. It was beautiful graphics and everything, and it, as far as I know, it was quite successful, and now he's posting all the time on his blog about how he's switching to like learning new software, learning to program, and like doing the same thing I'm doing, where it's like finally diving in and just not assuming that, oh, that my programmer over there is going to do it all for me and my artist is going to do it all for me over there. It's that he's actually diving in and being like, here's the game system, here's the art for it, here's the, like, everything, designing it, programming it. And
wow.
I think that's a much better route overall if you're a designer trying to get a cool idea across. Because if you take a cool idea and then you throw $15 million at it, that cool idea is going to be kind of derailed by like 70 or 80 other people along the way. But if it's like just one guy or like 15 guys trying to communicate one simple idea, they'll get that across and they'll get it across as pure as possible. So ideally, maybe that's exactly what Irrational is doing and just going like you're saying, effectively going indie. I think that would be a really, really cool model for a lot of big studios.
Mm. But then where's everybody going to go? Is everybody going to work for Microsoft now that gets fired or laid off, rather?
Well, I've got a lot of AAA guys on my Facebook, right? So it's funny watching like some of the guys from Irrational and some of the other guys at other studios being like, hey, at so-and-so, I've got a studio and I'm hiring, come to me. Or like, here's a thread, or like there's like Google Documents with studios that are hiring that are getting sent to all of the Irrational guys and just making sure everybody's got a home in the next 3 months, right? So
that's cool. The industry supported each other.
Oh,
though.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
really
cool.
Cool
to watch.
Wow. Okay. So that's interesting. Tristan's probably going to cry, though. Just we need to take a moment to rest in peace for BioShock, because Tristan, do you think BioShock's ever going to be the same now? They're going to have 2K games and like Larry from fucking marketing are going to make the games now of BioShock?
Well, they already made one, BioShock 2, which is not as good as BioShock Infinite, but actually is a pretty solid game, and it's still the only one that featured multiplayer, which was an interesting kind of arcade-y type multiplayer. It was pretty good. It's still fun to play nowadays because, you know, everybody's waiting for the Big Daddy suit to jump in on, like, deathmatch type modes, and then whoever gets the Big Daddy gets, like, 10 kills in a row before everyone figures out how to use tactics against him and take him down with all the, because you get to use all the, what was it called, plasmids in the BioShock Rapture, because it's
I like the BioShock 2 multiplayer. It gets a lot of hate, but I actually like it.
I think it's just people that are kind of fanboys of, like, the original. Like, no one can make it, you know, kind of like the Halo situation where I think Halo 4 might be the best, but, you know, nobody but Bungie can make this game. That similar situation.
Yeah, but like Call of Duty, their favorite company.
Yeah,
Treyarch ones are good. No, Infinity Ward ones are good. No.
Sledgehammer, bruh.
I don't think anybody says that.
No. Unless they like Modern Warfare 3. But,
so, Tristan, did you hear any news about what's going to happen with the Vita game? Did they design it at all yet? Did they, like, is it already ready to develop?
I don't know if this is, like, official, but something like, at first, Ken Levine was excited about making games for the Vita, but then he, like, this isn't official, this is just what I've seen. It could be entirely fake that the game is like wasn't in development, but they slowed it down because he ended up not liking the Vita because, you know, it's kind of not a flop, but compared to the 3DS.
They wanted a bigger install base.
There was just a couple issues they wanted.
But he doesn't have to make it now, so.
Yeah, so it'll probably come out, but it'll probably be a little bit different than the original product.
I have a weird feeling like it might not come out ever. And people kind of got mad at me for asking that. I said, like, will this become vaporware or whatever? And people were like, no, they already said 2K is making them. And I was like, okay, all right. But they didn't say anything at all about the Vita game.
They said
and
they're making BioShock games still because that's a business they could. Now, I don't want to say milk a couple more games, though, because BioShock 2 was a good game that wasn't
Vita
made
doesn't
by
exactly,
the original team.
And we know Vita doesn't exactly have a huge install base, but the people that are on Vita buy games, so that's pretty cool.
I played first-person shooters on Vita games, and it's pretty good controls. For FPS on 3DS is good as well, but
The only reason that I asked the question is because it was going to be a whole separate experience, like in the same universe.
Yeah, it was supposed to be an original story, But it was still going to go along the Rapture in Columbia, but it was going to be like a different setting. It was going to be, I don't know, some new idea. You know, maybe it was going to be in a forest or something. But now they'll probably, instead of going through the trouble of making a whole new arena again, they'll probably just revert back to either Rapture or Columbia, whatever they want to do. I mean, as long as it comes out, because I'd like to see more games come out for a handheld, because I kind of want to get into that market.
Okay.
I want to play games like Link Between Worlds. I want to play the Uncharted game. But a BioShock game would definitely be a big thing, especially if it was a Vita exclusive and not on the, which it was supposed to be a Vita exclusive.
Right.
It's not canceled yet. It's just
kind of in vapor mode a little bit.
Yeah, because they might want to focus on making BioShock for next gen.
Yeah, they announced it, and then they never said anything again. They were just like, oh, don't worry about that. That's our cousin, Larry.
Don't worry about it, bruh.
Yeah, he's on vacation in Florida for a week. He'll be back.
Hopefully it comes out, though, because that would be a different market to expand to, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of game franchises that have done that. They put some games on handhelds, and it'll inspire an entirely new breed of game. You know, you'll still have your main installments, but then you got these handheld games that people, because there's always some people that only will play handheld gaming.
Right.
I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but there are some people that only buy handhelds because, you know, some people only play PlayStation because that's what they like. Some people only play one version of handheld, even though as for me, you already know I like everything.
Yeah, it's kind of hard with 3DS and Vita being so different to choose one. I wouldn't be able to choose only one except for money issues. But
they're both entirely different, you know. They got different games on them. You can't really compare them. They got this.
Yeah, but we're kind of going a little off topic though. But yeah, I thought that was worth talking about, and I just wanted to say one other thing that indie devs have incredible stamina and work ethic, and if the industry of AAA needs to like narrow back down to that, not saying that they don't have the work ethic, but maybe their management or like the way things are like supposed to be connected, like this guy talks to that guy every day and then this guy sends reports to that guy, like that stuff's probably set up wrong where it's not efficient, or maybe it's right set up right but it costs too much. And then if people can go into smaller teams, I've been trying to suggest something like that for Square Enix or like Capcom, other companies. I don't see why they don't like send a group of guys, like, all right, you guys go make a 2D game, like, for $15 or $10.
Yeah, like a 2D Mega Man game or something, you know?
Yeah, they did one game, but that's it.
Yeah, but that was...
And Square Enix never did any 2D RPGs. They keep re-releasing, which is cool, but there's no reason they can't make, like, an original and be like, boom.
Make like, a classic Final Fantasy game or something.
Yeah, just, like, totally new, though.
It's not a remake, just a new story, but make it at the old style that they had there for a long time.
To me, that seems like an instant cash-in, especially you could name drop and stuff. But,
I work in a couple studios now, and being in them, and so, like, normally I freelance and do AAA stuff, right? And then going into a couple of the studios and walking around, and like I've got this indie mindset. I've always tried to like get crews of guys together that want to work for free and make something cool happen, and maybe it'll be the next big thing, right? I've always got that dream burning in the back of my head. But then to go into a studio and be like, hey, why, like in my mind, I'm like, why don't you guys go make like a little $15 game, spend a couple months on it, and watching just how much waste, like the amount of staff standing around doing nothing, the amount of money spent on $800 chairs, the amount, like, I've seen more than most people's wages per year spent on office furniture in one day.
Oh my god.
And I'm sitting there going, oh my god, I could make several games for this. Oh my god, you just bought that many chairs? What? And it's driving me crazy. Wow. And so, I guess, there's that exact desire. Like, I wish all of these big studios would have that indie mindset. Like, they're sitting around on their huge salaries with their huge overhead expenses for their huge numbers of staff, and they're making one game. They're like all of their eggs in one basket.
They take 3 or 4 years, and then they false advertise and they piss us off. The hardcore gamer. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that, but
No, it's true. And then like, I don't know. It's so bizarre to me that they would actually go through with that kind of a system when so much more could be done with that money. It's like, I guess this is the burning urge to do so much with what time you have, like that indie work ethic comes from, right?
So yeah.
Sometimes these gaming companies are too big for their own good. You know
what
I mean?
And I would like to make a game someday, but make it. If I was to make a game, I would honestly. I know this is kind of a trend for indie, but I would definitely make some type of retro style RPG, kind of like a Link to the Past or a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, think about like all those retro games that everybody still is super hardcore about, like all of those. The game you mentioned, and like Quake.
Metroid.
Quake, all of those games. Think about those teams that built those, like id Software back in the day. That was your 7-person team working out of a garage, right? Like it is the it used to be indie. Then it went
if it wasn't for indie, we wouldn't be having this discussion now. It's because
it's literally like a pendulum that happened. It was like games started as indie, then they went AAA, and now they're swinging
indie
back.
Indie is the grandfather of gaming. That's basically what it is.
AAA is a bad thing because there's some quality AAA games. It was just the fact hardware was getting bigger and better, and especially when the Nintendo 64 and PlayStation 1 came out with the capable of making entirely 3D rendered games, with the first one being Super Mario 64, and widely acclaimed not just because it was that, because the opening of 3D created a new gameplay style as we're able to do, and the addition of analog sticks changed a lot of things.
Yeah, I think that's why Quake is so precious to me, is because I remember going into Q-Test in like 1996, their little demo that they released in February, jumping into that, and then like walking around being like, oh my, it was choppy because it was 3D and my computer could barely handle it, but looking around being like, oh my god, it's actually 3D, and there was a bridge with water, and I went in the water, and then I went under the bridge, and it blew my mind. That was it. That was it for me. I knew something cool was happening.
Oh, snaps. The old good old days. I remember
the golden age of gaming.
I played Wolfenstein 3D later on, but the first 3D game I got my hands on, I believe, was not Quake. I missed on the boat on that one, and I played it later. And then I also played Unreal. I played a lot of that. But the first one I got to play myself was Duke Nukem 3D.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I loved that. At the time when it was released, it was my first like 3D PC game. I think I played a couple consoles that were like sort of 3D. That wasn't really the same, though, as the shooters, the progression that they made with like Quake and Unreal. That was like really defining, changing the industry. Like, and then everybody else kind of just like went in that direction, which was good, because now we have lots of very, very immersive games. You know, but that kind of brings me to another discussion. I had a segue, but I just let you guys go forward anyways. But like what we were saying earlier about the overbloated budgets and stuff, and then they come out with the games, and they're like for example, Titanfall is multiplayer only, and it's $60, and there's going to be DLC that you have to buy. And they're trying to say, like, oh, you're getting it a single-player narrative in the multiplayer, but that's never been done, like, in a cool way. So far in the industry, like, it's been done, but not, like, so I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
And wait, see till it comes out.
Well, let me finish. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt to assume that their techniques can be different than past techniques, but that still is a question mark. Like, $60, a lot of people are going to be afraid about that, especially where they're going to be selling DLC. We don't know how much free DLC they'll give. They could give some, but it's kind of like with shooters that are competitive like that, you kind of want to be on all the maps. You don't want to get left behind. When back in the old days, the maps were always free, so it's like, do they really need those budgets to make all that and then $60? That kind of leads us into the next thing, which is how should indie games be priced? And like, I had a couple thoughts in my head about it, but I mostly have questions because I'm not, I think it's really curious to me. Sometimes I see genre ones where I'm like, oh, they could have got more for that, and then I see other ones and I'm like, they want that much for that? And I'm like, maybe it's not what I think it is. Like, is it the art direction, the genre? That's what I tend to think sometimes, but it's probably not that. because then there's tools and stuff. Is it the amount of hours you could play from it, replay value, the cinematic value, the gameplay, the immersion? Like, I guess it's different for each gamer, but how do any devs, how are they going to compete with each other during this, like, indie explosion, especially on Steam, without driving down the value of all the products? Like, Barry, I wanted to know if you could speak on that, because that's one worry that some people have, is that by so much competition, like, oh, you can get my game for $1 today, and then the other guy's like, you can get my game for 75 cents today, and then they're like, crap, we didn't make any money. Like, so that's like the long-term fear, but right now it's not like that. But what do you think about this whole phenomenon and how indie games are priced? I'm sure you've had to think a lot about that recently.
Yeah, I actually had to think a lot about it. I've just kind of like looked at like what Edmund and Phil have done for pricing with like Fez and stuff like that, and Super Meat Boy, because I don't know how long their games last and all that. So I literally
like kind of amount of time.
Yeah, so that's good. Like couple like 5-6 hours kind of thing.
Maybe a little bit longer, but.
Oh, that's good. That's awesome.
Or like maybe so. 8. Well, except for maybe Fez, Super Meat Boy's like 4 or 5.
Yeah, and then that kind of becomes a gray area a little bit, not to derail you, Barry, yeah. But like some people speed run through the game, and then other people just play it. So what you may call 3 to 5 hours, I could spend 8 hours playing, possibly.
It's true. Yeah,
yeah. You could. Everyone has different play times.
That's like Quake Done Quicker when you watch it. I keep going back to Quake. Quake Done Quicker, where you watch someone go through it in like 15 minutes, they'll go through the whole game. It makes no sense.
Right. So, all right, sorry to derail you. Back to what you're saying.
Yeah, so I've just kind of been, like, I guess looking at it for, like, an hours of gameplay versus dollar value, and I kind of think, am I wrong in assuming that a lot of indie games are in the, like, 10-ish dollar range at this point?
Yeah.
For a big, meatier, larger-sized game?
I would say, like, between 7 to 20 is where the indies are landing, depending on the game. And then some of them are below that, but that becomes questionable of how sustainable is it, I think. But
yeah, for sure. If you're hitting the kind of sales that like Edmund and Phil do, then you're fine at $1 a pop even. But yeah, it's tricky. Like, I guess if I put my game at $10 or $15 and I don't know what kind of sales am I going to see when the game's out. Who knows? Am I going to have wasted all my time, or will I break even, or will I never have to worry about money again for the rest of my life? Like, it's a really weird idea. Like, it could literally all be for nothing. Is my Kickstarter going to flop? Did I just waste the last month working my ass off on this Kickstarter? Or I don't know. It's a weird thing. So I guess, yeah, dollar value per time is kind of how I would look at pricing for indies and go with the flow. The whole indie thing seems to be working. People like the idea that even if the game is a little expensive, say if it's on a $20 scale and it's indie, they know that that whole $20, maybe minus a couple PayPal fees or whatever, is going to go to the developers. Whereas I bet you the BioShock guys probably saw something like $1 for every single sale they made. Like, it's a tricky thing. Like, sure, they got paid along the way, and that's their payment. Like, as a freelancer, I get paid to work on games, but I don't get paid if it's successful. There's no incentive there.
Yeah, that's another issue with the industry is royalties, but that's also an issue with music industry and films industry as well.
Sorry to cut you off, but to add to that answer, like, what I'm going through with my game, I started to really slow down on certain things to do, because it got to the point where, with me and the game that I'm slowly developing, it's how much realism can you add? You know what I mean?
And where does it stop being worthwhile?
The way I'm developing my game is based on World War III, where all the superpowers, joined together, and they would invade the United States. So the way how I'm doing it is the way how you would get shot in real life. Depending on where you get shot is depending on how fast or how slow you bleed out. It's based on that. But I started to slow down because I started to notice on paper before I would actually, you know, develop it, because I like to write out what I want to do because it helps me focus sometimes. I started to notice I was starting to get repetitive in certain things. So I don't know if you guys remember that app Flappy Birds came out.
Oh man.
Man, and
don't remind us.
I don't think that was a game.
That app took the market by storm. I mean, I don't want to put out his business. I don't want to put out the guy's name, but that guy was making $50,000 a day off that game. A day. And I looked at that game. I was like, let me see the whole hoopla about this game. And I looked at it, and I said, he's making $50,000 a day when Mario had better graphics than this?
Right, but that's kind of like more of a fluke.
And I tried it, and it was so addictive that I needed to play it. I needed to play it. When you play a game before you brush your teeth, that's when you know you're addicted.
Oh my god.
And
that's a good thing, though, from the developer's perspective. I have a hard time doing anything but, like, saluting the guy for doing that. I mean,
and the game looks crappy, but it's so fun.
Oh, it doesn't look that bad. Oh, come on.
Honestly, I don't find it fun at all, but that's just me, I guess.
I liked Tiny Wings. That was my addicting game.
Nice.
And I said to myself,
where are you going with this, Wilson, about the pricing of indie
games? The pricing of indie games, you know, Barry's right. You know, you want to make what you put in.
Yeah.
Okay. But sometimes you just get that one game. Like, Barry releases that game to the public. Hell, he can make $100,000 a day, which I hope you do. I hope you find that kind of success.
That'd be amazing.
Barry can be a millionaire before the ending of 2015 with that game. You just don't know. You just don't know. You know, the whole point of indie games is, yes, one, to get noticed. You're doing what you love. Doing to get noticed. And, of course, at the end of the day, it's all about money, because you want to succeed on what you do, and you succeed by how much money you make, because you want to see the work you put into it in many ways. But money is always going to be the main factor, because if people take a liking to this game, they're going to push Barry to make more. We want more, we want more, we want more. And that could be Barry's calling, and who knows? I could be working for Barry one day. You never know.
Yeah, but that's the end goal. I wanna have a studio where I can just keep going and keep going. And I used to outsource, like as a freelancer. I used to take on huge jobs and then hire out to my friends. That was the best feeling in the world. Like, the idea of having a studio in the future and, like, sustaining other people's lives through doing entertaining things, it's mind-blowing. So here's to hoping, like, all of us making games get to actually do that at some point.
Yeah, well, I'll say before, when we were talking about Irrational Games and some of the other companies and stuff, some of the moves that's going on with them, I think you had the right idea when you were talking about that stuff. I think you could pull it off. And based on, you know, there's a lot of waste, and you have acknowledged that for us. There's a lot of waste in game development at the bigger companies, and that's unfortunate. They're kind of losing their way right now, forgetting about the games. And,
but that's their fault, though. You can't really.
And also, they're the only ones that pay for it. Like, we're not really going to pay for it, because at the end of the day, somebody will come and buy out the IPs that they're not doing a good job with, or they'll just die out or whatever. We'll just keep gaming and gaming. Like, they're the ones that are going to lose out for that. And that's, I think, I like how you noticed that and acknowledged that, and how you spoke about taking some money aside and stuff to start a studio, because I've always thought about that too, about developers. I'd say, this guy's a really good developer. Why didn't he just take like $90,000 and have like the lowest budget one-man studio or something, like as a backup, or like a $300,000 and have like a big studio, or, you know, whatever amount of money they're able to save, because, you know, you have to have a life too. But if making games is what you love, you should you know, put something aside to keep that going, of course. Even if it's not profitable games, just games that you can make and you know, make break even.
I think that's the goal for every indie out there. I think they all want to eventually...
That's a really smart goal.
Everybody, yeah.
Well, we definitely wish you the best, Barry, and everybody check out realgamernews.com for the more about his game. We're going to be doing an indie spotlight. And Barry, do you have some websites to tell them to check out?
There's ashenrift.com, www.ashenrift.com. Nothing fancy in the address, no dashes or anything. And then Kickstarter in a couple of days, so that'll be good. Greymattercandy.com, G-R-E-Y, Canadian spelling, G-R-E-Y-M-A-T-T-E-R-C-A-N-D-Y.com is my development blog, so it goes into a little bit of the art production and stuff from Ashen Rift so far. I haven't updated it in a little bit, but yeah, go check those out.
Wow, all right. And I just want to do a few shout-outs before we cut this one out. For everybody that knows who Mega Ran is, or if you don't know and you're a gamer, then you need to know. He's responsible for hip-hop nerdcore projects such as Mega Ran, of course, based on Mega Man, Black Materia, based on Final Fantasy, and a lot more. And basically, he kind of like brings a game to life through hip-hop, and like he'll talk as the character sometimes, for example. Like, you guys just gotta check it out. Because right now, he just hit 10,000 likes on Facebook. He's touring the world and stuff for years now. And he's just giving back to everybody for the next, I would say, 12 hours or so, because he did it for 24 hours. You could go to megaranmusic.com and download all his music for free. And it's really high-quality stuff. He's been noticed by Capcom. They gave him full license to sample. He works with really good producers that sample the actual game's music. And he does that himself as well. So anyways, I just wanted to let everybody know, not really spamming or anything, just... You know, if you're a gamer, this is a really cool opportunity to grab all that music before he makes more and you end up wanting to buy it. You have something to listen to while you're waiting. And also, I wanted to let everybody know that for Real Gamer News, March 2014, we're going to be doing a lot of video reviews, gameplay, and developer interviews, and more. And if you have anything you want to see us talk about, or you see any articles that we didn't post, or you just want to pitch idea of what you'd like to see us do, since we have access to a lot of indie developers, and we can ask questions to a lot of game companies. So send us that at tips@realgamernews.com. Just shoot an email. And thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Thank you again, Barry, for jumping on and talking about Ashen Rift. Kickstarter coming soon.
Perfect. Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, awesome. And to everybody else, keep it real, keep it gaming. Peace.
Peace.
Swag.